This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions. This is Jerry Clinton, and I'm here with Night Transmission Show 107. I'm gonna start off with an episode of The Crime Club tonight. The Crime Club was produced by Willis Cooper, whose main claim to fame is that he produced and originated the classic horror radio programs Lights Out and Quiet Please. The Crime Club ran between 1946 and 1947 and was an abode for murder and mystery stories. It always opens the same way. A telephone will ring and a voice answers. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. It's quite a famous voice, actually. It's Raymond Edward Johnson, better known as Raymond from the Inner Sanctum. The Crime Club ran on the Mutual Network and had some kind of informal arrangement with Doubleday Publishing, although no one has ever turned up any evidence of a contractual arrangement. Doubleday had a literary imprint, The Crime Club, and most of the stories are adapted from the Doubleday series. The Doubleday imprint began in 1928 with the publication of Desert Moon Mystery, written by J. Cleaver Strahan, who is famous for having created one of the very earliest female detectives. The imprint was quite successful and would continue to publish until 1991. Tonight's episode, from May the 26th of 1947, is called Murder on Margin, and is adapted from a 1937 book by Robert George Dean.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Murder on Margin? Yes, we have that Crime Club story for you. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on the shelf. Here it is, Murder on Margin, by Robert George Dean. The very intriguing story of the stocks of passion and the bonds of death. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It is late evening in a room of a shabby hotel in Midtown Manhattan. A trim, slick-haired man is eyeing a blonde girl sitting near him on the sofa. He watches her carefully as she pours herself a drink.
You're hitting the bottle tonight, ain't you, Jones? That's the fourth one you've had.
So what?
Nothing. Only when you start guzzling like that, it's a sin something's eaten.
I told you I was tired.
Okay, baby, okay. Give me.
Oh, please, Nick, don't.
Yeah, you are tired, ain't you?
Well, what do you expect? You know better than anyone else what a day I put in.
You've had tougher days.
Maybe I have. Maybe I'm just getting sick of being a manicurist.
Well, I can't blame you for that. I'm not crazy about being a barber, either. Jones.
What?
Maybe you'll be able to quit your job soon.
How?
You know Larry Carson, don't you?
Who?
Larry Carson, the stockbroker. You know, the guy in the brokerage house a couple of doors from my shop.
Oh, yeah, I think I've done his nails.
Oh, sure you have, lots of times.
Well?
He's a smart trader. Knows the market inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's been giving some tips to Tony, who cuts his hair. And Tony's made himself quite a bundle.
So what?
So I've been talking to Tony. He's going to pass them tips on to me.
Oh.
I'm going to start right away. Just as soon as Carson gets back.
Gets back?
Yeah. He told Tony today he was leaving town on a business trip. But he won't be gone long. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. I think it's a swell idea, Nick.
You bet it is. Pretty soon I'll have some real dough and then... come here, baby.
Don't, Nick.
Just a little kiss, honey.
Don't.
Hey, you act like I'm poison or something. I said come here.
And I said let go of my wrist. Let go.
Hey, you got a bracelet on under your sleeve.
You're crazy.
Am I? Come on, let me see it.
No.
Let me see it.
My
Just a minute, sweetheart. Okay.
Give me back that bracelet.
Shut up. Diamonds, huh? Are you dirty two-timing liar? Who's the guy? I asked you, who's the guy?
Larry Carson gave it to me.
Carson?
Yes. It doesn't mean anything, Nick. I swear, I've been playing him for a sucker, that's all.
Playing him for a sucker?
Yeah, just getting all I could out of him for the two of us. No, Nick, don't!
For the two of us, huh? Come on, get up. Get up, I said. Don't. Don't.
Oh,
Are you all right?
Get out. Get out!
Okay. I'm going. So long, son.
Yes, Ruth?
It's rather late.
I'm quite aware of that.
Well, you mentioned that you wanted to turn in early.
Still the dutiful wife, eh? Well, I have some market reports I want to study.
Oh.
Answer that, will you?
Hello? Oh, yes, just a minute. You, Larry.
For me?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello, Larry. This is Joan Randall.
I thought I told you never to call this number.
I know what you told me, but I had to talk to you. Tried the other place and couldn't get you.
I see. All right, what do you want?
I heard you were taking a little trip tomorrow.
Yes?
I thought we had a date.
Sorry, I meant to call you about that before I left.
Oh, you meant to, huh?
Yes, it came up suddenly. It's just a routine business trip. I'll be back in a few days.
I don't like it.
Oh, don't be silly.
I'm not. I've had the feeling for some time now that you wanted to brush me off.
What?
I want to warn you, Larry. Don't do it.
I shall do whatever I please.
Yeah? Well, get this through your head, Mr. Carson. You'll pay off or else. Hello? Did you hear me? I said you'll...
This one didn't light either, did she?
She'll learn.
It's convenient to have a wife, isn't it, Larry? It must sound convincing when you tell them I won't give you a divorce.
Yes, I guess it does.
Larry, when are you going to set me free?
Soon.
You've been saying that for months now. Carl and I want to be married, and I want a clean start. That's why I haven't begun any action myself.
Yes?
We don't want to wait any longer. I want a divorce now.
Very moving appeal, my dear. But I confess I don't understand it. You and Carl Hamill? Why, he's strictly a lightweight.
Is he? Then why did you ask me to be a partner in your firm?
Well, that's quite simple, Ruth. I needed some money. Now, I'm sorry I took him in.
So is Carl.
I don't doubt it.
Larry.
Hmm?
I heard you mention something about a business that...
Well?
If you were to stay away a long time, it would delay my divorce.
That's quite an idea.
Yes. I've got another idea, too, Larry.
Oh? What is it?
I'm afraid I'd better keep this one to myself.
Oh, Mr. Hamill.
Oh, good morning, sir. Can I help you?
Well, yes, sir. At least I hope so. I'd like to see Mr. Carson.
Well, Mr. Carson is a very busy man.
Oh, I know, Mr. Hamill. I've been waiting here outside his office since 9:45, and now it's 9:40.
Oh, I see. Well, I was just going in to see Mr. Carson myself. I'll tell him that you're here.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, by the way, what's your name?
Pat Barton.
Pat Barton? The private detective?
Why, yes. I want to consult him about some stocks.
Oh, I'll be right back.
Okay. Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. Do you mind if I glance at the ticker?
No.
Thanks. Let's see. Commercial Solutions, 31.5. Say, that looks like a pretty good stock, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. Might go up to 32.
Yes, Larry, I will. Oh, was that last order 29.25? Right. Oh, Mr. Barton.
Yes, Mr. Hamill.
I told Mr. Carson you were waiting. He'll see you in 15 minutes.
Oh, thank you. Meanwhile, I'll just keep my eye on the ticker.
Fine. See you later.
Right. Let's see. Salt preferred, 20 and a quarter. Arise.
All right, Mr. Barton, I think we can go in now.
Okay, Mr. Hamill.
Oh, Larry, this is... Well, that's funny. He isn't here.
You're wrong, Mr. Hamill. Look, on the floor near the desk.
Good Lord.
Someone put a rope around his neck and pulled it tight. Very tight.
I swear I don't know how you do it, Pat, but every time there's a murder, you're right in the middle of it.
Well, I'm sorry, Lieutenant Riley. It just happens. I don't arrange them.
No, Well, the way you solve them sometimes makes me wonder. Okay, forget it. Let's take another look at the late Mr. Carson.
Okay.
Let's see. After he was strangled, he must have slipped to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But that would hardly account for his must-have appearance, though.
What do you mean?
Well, his shirt is half out, and his belt is twisted. Do you think that maybe he was just a sloppy dresser?
No, Lieutenant. You can see his suit was obviously just pressed. And look at the shine on his shoes.
Uh-huh.
I think the killer must have searched him.
For what? His wallet was still on him and nothing was missing from it.
Yes, but there wasn't much money in it. Did the medical examiner give you the time of death?
Yeah, probably between 10:15 and 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that tells you who the murderer is, sir.
Not quite, Lieutenant, but it helps.
Yeah, a lot. What gets me is how the killer got in and out. Now, there's Carson's private entrance leading to the hallway into the street, and that's locked.
Uh-huh.
And now, this door here to the main office, through which you entered. Now, you say that you were sitting right next to it from a quarter to ten on?
Yes, and the only one who entered was Carl Hamill.
I think I'll have a little talk with that guy. Mr. Hamill?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Would you mind stepping in here?
Not at all.
Mr. Hamill, according to Mr. Barton here, you were the only one to enter this office.
Yes?
And that was about 20 after 10, a time when Carson might have been killed.
What do you mean? You know that he was alive when I left the office.
Do we?
Well, of course, Mr. Barton. Well, you were sitting right at the door when I came out. You heard me turn around and ask him about that last quotation.
Yes, I heard you, but I didn't hear him.
Huh? Oh, that's right. I remember now. He didn't answer me. He just nodded.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Hamill, excluding Mr. Carson, who had a key to the private entrance of this office?
Well, I believe Mrs. Carson had one.
Oh, she did, eh?
Yes, but surely you don't think that she had anything to do with this. Why, she couldn't...
Take it easy, Mr. Hamill.
Pat? Yes, Lieutenant?
One of my men reported that in the hallway leading from Carson's private entrance to the street is the door of a private club.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, there's a doorman posted at that door from 9 o'clock on. He'll be able to tell us just who entered this office by way of that private entrance.
Oh, good. Well, I get...
Yeah, what's that? What is that?
Supply closet, Lieutenant.
Let me out.
Well, there she is, behind the filing cabinet.
Oh.
Hey, give me a hand, will you? I can't seem to get out of here by myself.
All right. We'll just get this cabinet out of the way a bit. There we are. Okay, come on out.
Yeah, sure.
Why, Miss Randall.
You know this girl, Mr. Hamill?
Why, yeah, she's the manicurist at a barber shop a few doors down the street.
Oh, okay, Miss Randall, talk.
Huh?
She seems to be pretty drunk, Lieutenant.
Yeah. What were you doing in that closet, sister?
Who wants to know?
I'm Lieutenant Riley of the police.
Police?
Yes. Take a look at the floor near the desk.
Oh, Barry's dead, huh?
Uh-huh. You ought to know.
Me? I didn't do it.
No? How'd you get in here?
I had a key. Larry gave it to me.
Oh.
The louse was going to run out on me. I wanted to have a little talk with him.
Uh-huh.
I got here early, before 9. Didn't want anybody to spot me coming in. I hid behind the cabinet in the closet.
How come you're so boiled?
Well, I knew it'd be a long wait, so I took a flask along. I was nervous. Before I knew it, the flask was empty. And then I passed out.
Uh-huh. Miss Randall, there's a keyhole in that closet door. Did you see or hear anything that might help us?
No, not a thing.
I see. Okay, sister. I'm going to send you home to sober up. But don't get any idea that you're out of this mess. I'm going to check on you all the way. Pat?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Get your hat. We'll start check with the barber shop where she works. Were you Carson's barber, Nick?
No, Lieutenant. Tony took care of him.
Oh, well, where is this Tony?
Well, it's been raining all morning. We were slow, and Tony and the others ducked out. They're probably chewing the fat in a cafeteria down the street.
Uh-huh. You got a manicurist named Joan Randall?
Yeah, she didn't show up this morning.
I don't think she'll be in today, Nick.
Well, what do you mean, Mr. Barton?
Why are you so nervous?
Well, Joan and me, we've been kind of going around together, and if anything's happened to her...
Well, nothing's happened to her yet.
But she's in quite a spot.
You see, we found her in Mr. Carson's closet.
Yeah?
She was pickled, Nick. Now, was that a habit of hers?
Well, when she's worried, she likes a couple of shots.
Uh-huh.
Nick, it seems that Joan and Mr. Carson were quite friendly. Did you know that?
Yeah, it didn't mean anything. He had a lot of dough and, you know how it is.
Yes, we know.
You don't think she killed Carson, do you?
We're not sure, Nick. But if you ask me, you're going to need a new manicurist.
For me, Lieutenant, it is unbelievable. I simply refuse to believe it.
I know, Sasha, I know. But Carson's dead. You got to help us.
Me help you? How?
What time were you at your post this morning?
What time? Why, 9 o'clock. In all my 23 years as doorman to this club, I arrive at 9 sharp. Not before, not later.
Uh-huh. And from your post, you can see anyone who enters the hallway to go to Mr. Carson's office.
Absolutely.
Sasha, do you know Joan Randall, the manicurist from the barbershop around the corner?
You mean the blonde barish? Sure I know her.
Did you see her enter the hallway this morning?
No.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
She must have got here before 9, like she said.
Did you see anyone else, Sasha?
Yes. Just one person.
Who was it?
It was Mrs. Carson.
Mrs. Carson, eh? What time was that?
About 9:45. No, 9:40.
And she went down the hallway to Mr. Carson's office?
Yes.
Did you see her go in?
No. The hallway turns to the left. You can't see the door.
He's right, Lieutenant.
Okay. Now, I want you to be very careful about this next one, Sasha. When did she come out?
I don't know.
Huh?
You see, a little while after she came in, I had to call a cab for a member.
Yeah?
I was outside for a couple of minutes.
In other words, she could have slipped out during that time.
Correct.
Oh.
Sasha, would it have been possible for anyone else to have entered while you were outside?
No, this could not happen. When I went out, I looked up and down the street. There was nobody near enough to sleep in.
Oh, I see. Well, Lieutenant, what's next on the menu?
A blue plate special. Mrs. Carson. Mrs. Carson, do you have any idea who might have murdered your husband?
No, Lieutenant.
I have.
Yes?
You, Mrs. Carson.
Me?
Yes.
Why, that's absurd. Utterly absurd.
For your information, you were seen going down the hallway to your husband's office.
What?
Oh, come, Mrs. Carson. The identification was positive. You were there, weren't you?
Yes, Mr. Barton. But I didn't see Larry.
Huh?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I went up to the door of the office, and then I stopped.
Why?
The transom was open. I heard Carl, Mr. Hamill, talking to Larry. I lost my nerve and left.
What do you mean you lost your nerve?
Well, I guess I'd better tell you the whole story.
Yeah, I guess you'd better.
I'd wanted a divorce from Larry for some time. Without going into it, I can assure you I had very good reasons.
Yes, we met one of them.
Hmm?
Never mind, Mrs. Carson. Go on, please.
Well, I met Carl Hamill, my husband's partner. We fell in love. I told Larry about it and asked him for a divorce, so that Carl and I could be married.
Mm-hmm.
Larry kept putting me off. Then last night I learned that he was taking a trip out of town. He said he'd be gone for only a short time.
Yes?
I had the feeling that he was up to something. You see, he was very spiteful. I felt that he was going to stay away till the day of my divorce. I made up my mind that he wasn't going to get away with it.
Uh-huh.
This morning, I set out for his office for a showdown. I took a gun along.
A gun, huh?
Yes, but when I stood outside Larry's door and heard Carl's voice, I realized how foolish I'd been. I knew that I could never kill Larry.
Uh-huh.
I turned around and went home.
Mrs. Carson, did you hear what Mr. Hamill and your husband were talking about?
Yes. They were discussing some stock quotations.
Did Hamill mention the quotation on murder?
What do you mean? You don't think that Carl... Oh, no. He didn't kill Larry.
Of course not. He didn't. You didn't. Nobody did. Only the guy is dead and the commissioner wants to know why.
Hello?
Hello, Ruth.
Oh, Carl. I was hoping that you'd call.
You heard about Larry?
Yes. The police have just left.
Oh.
Carl, I'm afraid we're in trouble.
What's the matter?
I did something terribly foolish. I went to Larry's office this morning.
What? But why did you...
Wait, I didn't see him. When I got to the door, I heard you talking to him.
Oh.
I heard you quarreling.
Did you tell the police about it?
No. No, I told them you were discussing stock quotations. Carl, is there anything you want to tell me?
Ruth, you don't think I killed him, do you?
No.
But, darling, you sound as if...
I love you, Carl. No matter what happened, remember that. I love you.
Good evening, Lieutenant. I made it as fast as I could. What's up?
I've got some more pieces for our puzzle.
You have?
Yes. Do you remember when we examined the corpse? You thought the killer had searched him?
Yes.
Yeah, you were right. And whoever it was made off with $100,000.
What?
I had a man go over the books at Carson's. There was $100,000 missing from the credit balances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it looks like Carson was going to take it on the lam, you see? And he figured on traveling light to throw everyone off guard.
Yes, probably just an overnight bag and the money. From the appearance of his disarranged clothing, I'd say he had the cash in a money belt.
Uh-huh.
Did you speak to Hamill about this?
Yes. Yes, and he was quite upset. Not only over the loss of the dough, he said. He was worried about the effect on the firm's business.
Mm. Well, is there any way to trace that money?
No, and I haven't got the ghost of an idea. Who can it... Wait a minute.
Hmm?
Joan Randall. I've had the feeling that dame was holding something back.
You think she took it?
Either that or she knows who did. Come on, Pat. Let's get to her before she puts away another quart.
Maybe she's out, Lieutenant.
Yeah, Pat, but not the way you mean. She's probably hit that bottle again. Oh, there's no use. The door's locked.
I have a key, Lieutenant.
Huh?
A key that opens a lot of doors.
Oh, well, go ahead. Make believe I'm not looking.
Okay.
There we are. Now let's see. The light switch ought to be... Here. Well, I don't smell any liquor, so maybe... Holy smoke. She really is out. Look, for good.
Yes. Whoever stabbed her wasn't kidding. She must have been lying on the bed. Is that odd?
What is?
Well, apparently, after she was stabbed, she still had enough strength to reach down and clutch one of her shoes from under the bed.
Yeah, she probably rolled over and held on to whatever came into her hand.
No, Lieutenant. Shoes are usually placed together on the floor. And from the position of the one still there, it would have had to strain to get the shoe she's holding.
Yes. Well, why do you think she grabbed it, Pat?
I think it was an attempt to tell us who murdered her.
Oh. Well, it's a woman's shoe. And the only other woman in the case is Mrs. Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe... Yeah. Yeah. While I was talking to Hamill about that money, he told me he used to be a shoe manufacturer.
What?
Yeah. Well, I guess that does it.
I'm not sure.
Huh?
There's something that keeps buzzing in the back of my mind. Something...
Why, of course.
Larry Carson's shoes.
Larry Carson's shoes?
Yes. Now, there's just one thing we ought to check, Lieutenant. And then I think you'll be able to wrap this case up. Better keep back out of sight, Lieutenant.
Okay, Pat. I just wanted to make sure that Sasha is still sitting on that park bench.
Oh, don't worry. I've got my eye on him every second.
Are you certain your plan will work?
I don't see how it can miss. A half hour ago, Sasha telephoned the killer. His message will force the murderer to meet Sasha here in the park.
I see. Then you expect another knifing job, huh?
Right. And we'll have to be on our toes to prevent it. Wait, Lieutenant. I think we're getting a bite.
Hello, my friend. I was beginning to think you weren't coming. I thought maybe... Help!
Get him, Lieutenant. Get him.
Stop or I'll shoot!
Good shot, Lieutenant. Are you all right, Sasha?
Yes, Mr. Barton.
Good. Is he alive, Lieutenant?
Yeah, the bullet just creased his scalp. Okay, Nick, come on, come on. Up on your feet. As a barber, you usually stand behind a chair. Well, now, we're going to let you sit in one.
Did Nick reveal where he hid the money, Lieutenant?
Yes, it was under the floor in his room.
Oh, good. It's nice of you to give me a lift home, Lieutenant.
Ah, that's all right, Pat. You deserve it. And Sasha, too.
Ah, it was nothing. Nothing at all. Only don't ever ask me to do it again.
Don't worry, we won't. Say, Pat, how did you tumble to Nick anyway?
Well, there was the fact of the shoes, Carson's and Jones.
Uh-huh.
Carson's shoes were shined, and that was peculiar.
Why?
Well, since it rained all morning, his shoes should have been spotted.
Yeah, that's right.
But I failed to see the importance of that fact until Joan was killed. She died in the act of reaching for her shoe.
Uh-huh.
And then it hit me. Someone had shined Carson's shoes. Obviously, he wouldn't have done it himself. So, the only other possibility was a shoe-shine man.
Yeah, but where in the world...
Well, since there was no shoe-shine man involved in this case, I turned to the only person who could have impersonated one.
Nick the barber.
Exactly.
Oh.
He was alone in his shop. Not only the barbers were gone, but also the shoe-shine man.
I see. So Nick dressed up in the dark apron, carried the box, and got by.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wait a minute. How did he get into the Carson's office without Sasha seeing him?
But you know, Lieutenant, there are some men who are invisible.
Invisible?
Yes. That is, they're taken for granted. Nobody observes them. Like a mailman, for instance.
Oh.
Well, a shoe-shine man visiting the offices in a business building is exactly the same. You pay no attention to him, so he loses his identity.
I see.
Of course, when I brought the point up with Sasha, he remembered.
Oh, что такое? Я не знаю, что это.
What did you say, Sasha?
Never again. For the rest of my life will I get a shoe shine.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, Murder on Margin, based on a story by Robert George Dean. James Erthine did the radio adaptation, Roger Bauer produced, and Jock McGregor directed. Jack McBride played Lieutenant Riley, Julie Stevens was Joan, Helen Shields was Ruth Carson, Danny Occo played Sasha, Ray Thompson was Pat, Joe DeSantis was Nick, and Sherling Oliver was heard as Carl Hamill. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very exciting story of a package that was wrapped up by death. It's called Murder Makes a Mummy. In the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week. And every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
This program came from New York. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Autolite resistor spark plugs are ignition engineered by Autolite, which makes more than 400 products for cars, trucks, airplanes, and boats in 28 plants from coast to coast. Autolite also makes complete electrical systems for many makes of America's finest cars. All ignition engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team. The lifeline of your car. So, folks, don't accept electrical parts that are supposed to be as good. Remember, you're right with Autolite.
Up next is an episode from The Haunting Hour called The People in the House, which was originally aired sometime in 1945. The Haunting Hour was one of those programs that was made for syndication, and although fairly successful, not a tremendous amount is known about it. It has a very shallow history, and there exist no credits for the show. And the people who labored behind the microphones are pretty much entirely unknown now. Some of the people in front of the microphones are well known. Frank Lovejoy, Jason Beck, Eve Arden, and Betty Furness. The writing staff is known. Max Ehrlich, Edwin Wolfe, and Brett Halliday. The next episode is a well-told story about the Thatchers. A couple who lived together quite unhappily with the groom's father in a house on East 67th Street in New York, spending most of their time hating each other.
Break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the Haunting Hour. People in the House. All houses have their secrets, and the house on East 67th Street in New York was no exception. Its rooms had seen the births and deaths of seven generations of Thatchers, and now they looked down with despair upon the three people living within its walls. Evans Thatcher III, his son Kendall, Kendall's lovely wife Margaret. For evil and hatred stalked the rooms and took you by the throat when you entered the house. It was polite and hidden, but sinister. And present so strongly that you felt you could reach out and touch it.
Margaret, come in, my dear. I've been waiting for you.
Oh, I didn't know you were home.
Aren't you forgetting something, my dear?
I didn't know you were home, Father.
That's much better, Margaret. I only ask that you behave as any daughter should to a father-in-law.
Where's Kendall, Father?
My dear, Kendall is only my son, but he's your husband. I'm surprised you should ask me his whereabouts. Most wives of my acquaintance are...
All right, Kendall isn't home. Let's stop acting.
My dear child, I've never acted with you. It is you who pretends to like me. I take little pains to conceal my dislike of you.
I hate you. I hate you more than I believed I could ever hate another human being. And if it weren't for Kendall...
Why don't you divorce Kendall, my dear? I'd gladly pay for it. Kendall isn't the proper husband for you. You should have married the strong young detective. There was a suitable match for you. By the way, what was his name?
Walters. Larry Walters.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the name perfectly. Father. And I didn't marry him because I was in love with Kendall.
Oh, come now, my dear. We both know the truth. You could hardly marry a representative of law and order if you told him the truth about yourself. But after tonight, why, I imagine that difficulty should be solved.
Oh, you're completely vile. But there's one thing you've never understood. A mind like yours can't understand it. I love Kendall more than I hate you. And I'm not going to leave him alone with you so that you can ruin him completely.
Too bad that you can't afford to move out of my house into an apartment of your own, isn't it? I'm sure that if Kendall could get a job and support you, you'd be deliriously happy.
Yes, I would. But you've taken good care to see that Kendall is too weak to go out in the world, haven't you?
Now, my dear Margaret...
I don't know what you're doing. You've hated Kendall since the day he was born and deliberately set out to ruin him by giving him everything he wanted. You've made Kendall so completely dependent upon you that he's afraid to leave. You've pampered him so that he's fit for nothing.
You're insane.
No, I'm not. I'm perfectly sane. I'm willing to stay here and fight you till I've made a man out of Kendall. We both walk out of this house together with our heads up.
And I'll see you both dead and rotting first. Oh, good evening, Kendall. Did you take my message to the club?
Yes, Father. Mr. Ainsley said there was no reply.
Oh?
Hello, Margaret.
Hello, darling. Well, aren't you even going to kiss me? I haven't seen you since this morning.
You bet I am.
Nonsense, Kendall. Stop acting as if you were a newlywed instead of behaving like a man who's been married a whole year.
Well, my mother and father were married 22 years, and he kissed her every night when he came home.
There. You see, Father, kissing your wife...
Kendall, come along upstairs. I want to talk to you. My dear Margaret, you'd better change. We're dining with some friends of mine.
But Kendall and I had planned to eat home tonight, Father.
Did you? I didn't... I don't very well see how you can... I left instructions that there was to be no marketing today and gave the servants the night off. Are you coming, Kendall?
Yes, Father. I'll see you later, Margaret.
I hate you, Evans Thatcher. I hate you. I wish you were dead. Larry, is that you?
Margaret, what is it? What's the matter?
Larry, I've got to see you.
Foolish child.
I must have a wrong number.
No, you haven't, Margaret. You're in trouble. I'll be right over.
No, you mustn't. You mustn't. Goodbye.
Well, are we all ready? Margaret, you look beautiful in that dress.
I'm afraid that the dress will have to go back, Kendall.
But, Father, why? You said yourself...
I changed my mind. I will not pay for it.
I don't want you to pay for it. I didn't ask you to buy it. Oh, Kendall. Kendall, can't you see what he's doing to us? I don't want him to pay for anything of mine ever. Kendall, please. Please, let's get out of this house now.
Margaret is hysterical, Kendall. She doesn't know what she's saying. She's just done something very stupid and childish, for which I'm afraid I must punish you, Kendall.
No, I'm not going to stand by and see this again. You're not
going
to...
Come here, Kendall.
I'm sorry, Father, really. I'm sorry. I mean it. I'll never do
it's
it again.
It's a little late for that, my dear. Come here, Kendall.
You can have the telephone taken out, I promise. Please don't hit Kendall.
Mr. Thatcher?
Oh, come in, Mr. Walters. It was thoughtful of you to telephone, let me know you were coming. It enabled me to open the door myself. I don't like to let the servants know that I have detectives calling on me.
Oh, you don't like detectives, Mr. Thatcher?
Not in my house. As a matter of fact, though, I've been expecting a call from you for a few days now, ever since Margaret was so foolish as to telephone you the other night.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Thatcher, that's just the reason for my visit. Margaret didn't sound at all well to me.
Very observant of you, Mr. Walters. Margaret isn't well. She's a neurotic.
That's funny. When I knew her, she was a perfectly healthy young lady.
Perhaps. But now she's definitely neurotic.
Then, of course, you've put her under the care of a physician.
I dislike your attitude very much. Are you implying that my son and I aren't treating Margaret properly? Because if you are, you can get out now. Actually, you have no right in this house. I received you because I wanted to show you that there was no reason for Margaret's call to you the other night. Now I shall let you see Margaret. You can hear from her own lips what I've been telling you.
Yeah, I'd like to see her.
If you'll excuse me, I'll go up and bring her down myself.
Thanks.
I won't offer you a drink. However, the radio is over there if you wish to turn it on. It may help you pass the time.
We interrupt this program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin. Dandy Jim Carrey broke out of the death house a little over 4 hours ago.
Holy mackerel.
With only 2 days before his execution, Dandy Jim became the first prisoner ever to escape from the death house. The police have thrown a dragnet all over the country and promise a speedy arrest. Keep tuned to this station for further details.
Here he is, Margaret. Please tell him how you feel.
Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Larry. I don't know what was the matter with me. I was just upset and nervous. That's why I called you, Larry.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Thatcher told me.
Now, look here, Walters. I've stood for a lot from you because you were a friend of Margaret's. But I'm telling you, I'm not going to stand for any more insinuation. It won't do either Margaret or Kendall any good at all. Remember that, Margaret.
I'm not insinuating anything, Mr. Thatcher, but I'm not a fool. I know darn well that Margaret called me for some reason, and I don't believe a word of what you're saying.
All right. You've succeeded in making me do something that's very painful, both to me and Margaret.
Please go, Larry. Please. I don't need your help. I don't want it.
Don't worry, Margaret. I promise you that this won't affect Kendall at all. Now, Mr. Walters, here are the facts. Margaret's made a very good marriage.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Exactly. A girl in Margaret's position has no right to expect to marry my son. You see, Mr. Walters, my son was brought up with everything in the world he wanted. His for the asking. Margaret, on the other hand, had a much different life. Much different.
You mean that she wasn't spoiled?
That and other things. If I did spoil Kendall, Mr. Walters, it's only natural. When a child's mother dies at the birth of a child, and a man has to be both father and mother, his son is apt to be indulged.
Or hated.
Have you ever heard of Dandy Jim Carrey, Mr. Walters?
Oh, of course.
He's in the death house now, awaiting execution. You didn't know that he was Margaret's brother, did you?
Oh.
You see what your insinuations have made me do, Mr. Walters.
Uh-huh. I see. But it may interest you to know that Dandy Jim escaped from the death house 4 hours ago.
What?
Thank heaven.
I think that's your phone.
I'll answer it.
I wouldn't dream of it, my dear. I'll go.
Margaret. Margaret, why didn't you tell me? I can see you're in a jam. Let me help.
I can't, Larry. Just leave me alone. It's best that way.
Hello?
Believe me.
Hello. Hello, answer there.
But, Margaret, I only want to help. Believe me.
Evidently a wrong number.
Yeah. You seem to have a lot of them around this house.
And now, Mr. Walters, I think there's nothing more for us to say to each other, so...
Good night. If you want me, Margaret.
She'll know where to reach you. Good night, Mr. Walters. Now, my dear, we'll wait for the telephone to ring again. Only this time, when Mr. Walters isn't here, you will answer.
No. No, I won't.
I think you will. Won't you, my dear? I think you will. Won't you, my dear?
Where's Kendall? I want Kendall.
Kendall won't help you. He never will.
Stop it! Stop!
All you have to do is to pick up the telephone and say what I tell you. Well, you wouldn't want to disappoint your brother, would you? He desperately wants to get in touch with you.
All right.
Thank you.
And so the drama that was touching the lives of the people in the house on East 67th Street came swiftly to its violent conclusion. Evans Thatcher III was determined to dominate and rule his son, Kendall, at all costs. Hating his son from the day he was born, bringing him up a weakling by pampering him, he resented Kendall's marriage to Margaret Carey, a beautiful and strong-willed girl who is determined to break Evans Thatcher's hold over his son. Only Margaret had a brother, Dandy Jim Carey, who had escaped from the death house and is even now trying to get in touch with her, while she sits on a bench in Central Park waiting anxiously for Kendall.
Oh, Margaret, I'm sorry I'm late. I tried to get away, but Father...
I know, darling. Sit down here right next to me on the bench. Oh, the park's beautiful at night, isn't it, Kendall?
Mm. Gee, I look forward so much to sitting here quietly with you. The only time in the whole day that I'm happy.
Do you think that's right, Kendall, darling?
Huh? What do you mean?
Well, that two people so much in love and married should be only happy when they can sneak away from the house they live in to sit in the park and hold hands.
Oh, Margaret. I know. I'm no good. Why don't you leave me?
Oh, stop saying that, Kendall. Don't you realize that's just what your father wants?
I know, but there is... just nothing I can do about it.
But there is. You're going to have to make a decision, my darling. You're going to have to come away with me.
I want to. So much. But I'm scared. We'll starve, Margaret.
Well, we won't. I tell you, we won't.
It's hopeless. Do you think that I could stand watching you work and support me?
You wouldn't have to. You could go to work.
I want to. But... you know what happened when we tried it once before. Father saw to it that no one would hire me. And if I did get a job, he had me fired.
Well, we made a mistake. We'll have to leave New York.
Where will we go?
What difference does it make? We'll be together and we'll be happy.
But you won't have anything. I don't care so much for myself, but I couldn't stand it for you.
That's not true, Kendall.
Do you mean I'm lying? You mean that I really don't want to go with you?
I mean that... you're afraid to face the facts. You have no reason to be afraid for me. I wasn't wealthy before I married you, and I wasn't unhappy. I am now. I won't be because I love you very much if we go away together. I don't care how little we have as long as we're people, living together, supporting ourselves and away from your father.
Margaret, I will. We'll go away. We'll never see my father again.
Oh, Kendall. Kendall, darling. Oh, when will we go, Kendall? Tomorrow?
No, we'll have to make plans.
Why? Your mind is made up, isn't it?
Of course it is, but we can't just pack up and go like that.
Why not?
Well, there are things to do. We have to find a place to go. Get the tickets.
And... we'll go down to the station and get on a train. What difference does it make where we go?
But we can't rush. We... maybe...
Oh. All right, Kendall. I have an appointment now.
With whom?
Your father and my brother. I don't suppose you want to come with me.
I think it's better if I stay out of this.
Yes, Kendall. I guess I have to face it. I think it's better if I stay out of your life, too. Permanently.
Margaret.
Yes, Kendall. I love you very much, but you'll never break away from your father. As he told me, he's done too good a job.
Well, you talk as if Father were deliberately
trying to... you don't see it. You'll never see it. Goodbye, Kendall.
Look, Margaret, wait. Wait.
Come in, Margaret, my dear. It's cozy in here.
Why did you make me tell Jim to meet us here?
It's an ideal place, my dear. Who would ever think of looking for an escaped murderer in the Castle Chess Club?
Are you going to help him get away?
Question is premature, my dear. This reunion between beautiful sister and doomed brother appeals to my sense of the dramatic. That is why I brought you to the Castle Club tonight. I hope you realize the honor I've conferred upon you. The first woman ever to set foot in the Castle Chess Club.
That was your idea, wasn't it? You're the president of the club, and you made them put that rule into effect.
Why, yes, my dear. Now that you mention it, it was. You see, I don't believe that a chess club is any place for a woman.
That isn't the real reason. You hate women. You've hated us all ever since your wife died. And that's why you hate the son you think caused her death.
Shut up. Silence.
Shouting doesn't change anything. I'm right. That's the explanation for you and everything you've done.
You're impudent. And you shall pay for it.
I don't care. I'll do anything you want if you'll only help Jim get away.
Do you realize, Margaret, that you're asking me to break the law? Aiding an escaped criminal?
Stop it. I know all about you. How do you think I met Kendall? It was through Jim, of course. I knew that you were the leader in all the crooked business that Jim was doing. I begged him to stop, but he wouldn't.
Thank you for being so frank. I often wondered how much you knew about me.
And I know that it was your fault Jim killed Mr. Merritt.
Rather a bold knock for a man who's hiding. Open the door. Your brother will be glad to see you.
Kendall!
What do you mean by coming in here?
I thought that you should know that... Well, I followed you.
You followed me? For what reason? I specifically told you...
I noticed Larry Walters following you, too, and I thought maybe there was some trouble.
Well, it was very thoughtful of you, Kendall. Very thoughtful indeed. But as you see, there's nothing wrong. Margaret and I were just having a little chat. You can go now. Did you hear me, Kendall? I said you can go.
I heard you, Father.
Kendall, I want you to stay.
You'll regret this, my dear Margaret. Go home, Kendall.
If you won't do as I ask, then I want Kendall to stay.
I hope you heard what Margaret just said, Kendall. A deliberate attempt to blackmail your father and to do something unlawful.
Well, I don't... I'm not...
It's time you knew the truth, Kendall. We've been married a whole year, and if you're ever going to become a worthwhile person, now is the time.
Margaret.
You can't stop me now. I'm going to tell him.
Kendall, you can prepare yourself for some vicious lies.
Kendall, you're going to have to be strong enough to face the truth. Your father is a blackmailer.
I don't believe it. No, Margaret,
it's true. After your mother died, when you were born, Evans Thatcher became a bitter, rotten old man. He used his position and his reputation to find out things about people, and then he blackmailed them.
Ridiculous.
But Margaret, Father didn't need money.
He liked to hurt people, to see them squirm. He wanted to hurt the world because he'd been hurt.
Kendrick, she hates me so much, she's trying to poison your mind against me. She hasn't one iota of proof.
You covered your tracks well, didn't you? You had my brother Jim do all the dirty work for you. Didn't you ever wonder, Kendall, what business affairs your father and Jim could possibly have had together?
Well, it did seem kind of peculiar.
Kendall, go home. Let me handle this. I'll explain everything to you in the morning. My word of honor.
But, Father...
You have my word. Go home.
Hello, everybody. This is a nice little family gathering.
Jim!
Stay where you are, Jim. Stay right where you are, or this gun might go off. Go on, Kendall. Get out.
No. No, I'm staying. I want to hear all of this.
Yeah. Tell your son how you double-crossed me with Merritt.
Shut up.
Why? What have I got to lose? If you don't kill me, the cops will. Why don't you tell your son how you made me pack a gun when I went to Merritt's and how you knew he'd have one, too?
So it's true. Margaret wasn't lying. You are an evil old man.
One more step, Jimmy, you'll be dead.
Jim, wait. Mr. Thatcher will help you to get away.
Too late now, sis. But he could have helped me, he folded. And I kept my mouth shut in court for him.
Now we'll have the truth. You didn't accuse me because no one would have believed you. I was too careful.
What's the difference? First I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to die happy. Now get out of my way, Kendall.
Stand back, Kendall. He's not going to hurt me. I'm going to kill him. I won't be blamed for it. He's an escaped convict.
I'll tell. I swear I'll tell. I'll tell the police just how it happened.
You're not going to be alive to tell anyone anything. Kendall, stand back.
You're not going to shoot, Father, or you'll have to shoot me first.
Get out of my way. Are you crazy?
No, Father. Just seeing you as you really are. I'm growing up, Father.
You idiot! These fools can ruin me. I'm going to say that Jim killed Margaret. Then we took the gun away from you. But I had to shoot him in self-defense.
All right. Hold it. Everybody reach.
Oh, thank heavens you come, Walters. You can arrest this convict.
And you, Mr. Thatcher. Now I know why you dislike detectives. Drop that gun. Come along, Jim. give me that gun, Thatcher. No. Give it to me, Rat.
Break it up. Break it up, you two.
All right. Here. Take this.
Oh, Jim. Jim, darling.
So fix this. It's better this way.
Are you all right, Jim?
I'm okay. I'll be dead a little quicker than you thought. And, well, thanks for getting Thatcher for me.
I didn't get him for anybody. He took a shot at Margaret.
Thanks, anyway. Now Margaret will be all right. Won't you, sis?
You mean we'll be all right, Jim? Kendall and me.
Yes, that's right, Jim. Don't you worry about Margaret. We'll be really together now.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubts and fears. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
Adventure. It was winter, and in the north, ice and snow choked the road. But in the desert north of Tucson, Arizona, it was hot. John Williams, writer and soldier of fortune, wiped the perspiration from his brow and shifted in his saddle. He came to the top of a rise and halted. Below him, he could see the little camp he had been riding all day to reach. As he rode down the hill, a man came out of one of the tents to meet him. It was his old friend, Lieutenant Asa Woods, in charge of a surveying party for the Boundary Commission.
Ah, it's good to see you, John. Glad you decided to join us.
Well, I wouldn't have missed it for the world. After so long in town, I've got to get out where there's plenty of fresh air.
You got here just in time, too. There's going to be a total eclipse of the moon in a little while. You can help set up the instruments.
Well, I'd be glad to, Asa. That afternoon, the men mounted the large telescope on a small hill near the camp. There were many of the superstitious and sometimes hostile Pima Indians about, and they flocked to watch the strange goings-on of the white men. One of them, a minor chief by his dress, approached Williams.
What white man do?
He pointed a finger at Woods, who was busily lining up the telescope. Williams smiled, seeing a chance to play a joke on the Indians.
Well, this is a very powerful cannon. It's a big medicine, chief. We're going to shoot the moon.
The Indian wore a puzzled expression as he stepped back among his fellows. Asa Woods adjusted the telescope and took his place at the eyepiece, waiting for the eclipse of the moon to begin. Everyone was deeply attentive. The Indians looked on, wondering at the magic of the white men. The disk of the moon began to grow smaller. The Indian that Williams had spoken to began to talk to those around him, and they in turn passed his words along to the others. Suddenly, as if by a signal, the whole mass of Indians began to shout and dance about, waving their arms and pointing to the moon. The moon continued to disappear. Williams became alarmed. Woods had taken no notice of the noise. Now he turned from the telescope.
John, tell the Indians not to be afraid, will you? The eclipse will soon be over, and their moon god will be restored to them.
Yep, but I can't. I've already told them that we were shooting the moon. I had no idea they'd act like this.
As Williams spoke, an arrow thudded into the ground beside him, the feathered end quivering. The Indians were advancing, brandishing their weapons, bent on destroying these white men who had dared to attack their moon god.
Do something, Woods. Do something, will you? Do something before these crazy Indians kill us all.
Without a moment's hesitation, Woods stepped out before the frenzied Indians with upheld palm.
White man, big medicine. White man, bring moon god back to life. Look.
And the moon again came into sight. The angry shouts of the Indians changed to joy, and they fell upon their knees in homage to the white men's medicine. John Williams and Asa Woods, their arms about each other for support, headed for Tucson. This is Pat McGeehan saying goodbye from my writer Charles Crowder and inviting you to listen again to another tale of Strange Adventure.
We got a break. But we'll be back real soon with some science fiction. I hope you like science fiction. I sure do.
If you come in peace, surrender or be destroyed. If you're here to make war, we surrender.
All my life, I wanted to sit in front of the wagon and hold the reins. Well, what do you think I've got here now? A whole race of little people who look up to me like a giant out of the sky.
Set a course for Earth. Maximum warp.
The Earth? Oh, the Earth will be gone in just a few seconds.
Segment 3 and 4 is a two-parter from Alien Worlds, called The Sun Stealer, which originally aired on January the 7th and January the 14th of 1979. Alien Worlds was an American syndicated radio program that produced just 26 episodes in 1979, beginning with this one. It had an excellent soundtrack and good production standards. Eventually, the program would play on over 500 radio stations all over the country and would even be picked up internationally in New Zealand and Australia. The stories always involved a governing body for the development of exploration of space, the International Space Authority, and attempts to advance the interest of humans in interstellar space. The base is officially called the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory. As I said, there were 26 programs broadcast, but actually there are 4 more that never aired. This particular show, The Sun Stealers, well, I have to admit it's a bit cheesy. But if you've been listening to this program for a while, then you know something. You know that Gary is sort of partial to cheese.
Within the far reaches of deep space, there remain unknown planets, journeys into galaxies yet uncharted. Stellar exploration is the newfound adventure. High above Earth's windy skies, 1,000 miles in space, a large wheeling disk lazily drifts in orbit. A space station whose official designation is the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory. To those living and working aboard, it is simply called Starlab. Their lives and adventures become our story on the threshold of Alien Worlds.
Stand by, Mission Control. We have a red code report from Level C Radio Telescope.
Roger, Starlab Control. Go ahead.
Starlab Control, this is the Spectral Analysis Officer, Level C. Our radio telescope interferometry has detected unusual sunspot activity at a bearing of 409er.
Thanks, Bill. Keep us posted.
What's going on, Jerry?
I'm not sure, Tim, but we're going to find out.
Starlab Control, this is Telescope 4, Level D. We're tracking with Level C.
Yeah, Ken.
The solar graphs show high density activity.
All right, Level D. Print through the data on the ICM recorder, please.
Right control. It's online.
Look at this.
What?
That's more solar activity in the last 2 minutes than we've seen in 2 years.
I'd better call Dr. Cassidy.
Meanwhile, on Earth, the effect of the sun's strange activity begins. Kansas City, Missouri, 8.05 p.m.
Good evening, Mr. Jennings. Good to see you again.
Thanks, Ron.
Now, would the two of you care for a bottle of wine?
Yes.
That's
a good idea.
Great.
The usual, Ron.
All right.
Well, I'm certain you'll love the food here, Sylvia. It's a very special place. It's been a favorite spot of mine for years.
Mm.
I've known the owner a long time, too.
What's that?
Huh, that's strange. Probably just a heavy truck going by on the street outside.
My God, Roger! It's a ghost train!
Dropping. Anchorage, Alaska reports
earthquakes, tidal waves, and temperature shifts around the globe slowly intensify. A solar mystery unfolds, and back on Starlab, the disorder becomes even more apparent. 21:30 hours.
The Starlab Control, this is Scope 4, Level D. We've just tracked a third major flare-out on the sun's Earth side.
Level D, begin all radio telescope recorders. Feed us an audio scan. Plug in the Mycroft computers.
Roger. Mycroft on. Lock on scanners.
Hi, Dr. Cassidy. Thanks for coming up here. I knew you'd want to know.
All right, Tim. Now, what's going on?
The three of our main telescopes are tracking the sun.
Yes, and?
Analysis indicates an incredible amount of solar flaring and abnormal sunspot activity.
Earth stations are reporting earthquakes, tidal waves, and various other abnormalities.
We've begun tracking confirmation through our Mycroft Computer Center.
Okay, Tim.
This is Spectral Analysis Level C. We have a priority report.
This is Control Level C. Go ahead.
Jerry, I can't believe what we're seeing up here.
What is it?
It looks like we may be headed for a singularity condition on the sun.
Singularity? You mean the sun's going out? Bill, are you sure? Listen, we'll send Tim up there right now. We'll need all your current graphs and radiation scan reports.
Okay, Jerry.
And Bill, you'd better set up radar solar tracking operations, too.
Right, Dr. Cassidy.
Tim, you'd better get up there now. Get all the graphs and Mycroft readings.
Okay, Dr. Cassidy.
I'm not looking forward to telling the ISA the sun is going dead.
Knowledge concerning energy had become an important property to man. But the idea of the sun going out prematurely represents a new and very unusual situation for Dr. Cassidy and Starlab's research people. The beginning of a dark nightmare in the light of alien worlds. Alien Worlds continues. To those aboard Starlab, a shiny rotating observatory high above Earth, the sun seemed to be going dead. Radio telescopes reveal a once fiery sun darkening. Research Director Mara Cassidy contacts the International Space Authority.
This is the ISA, Dr. Cassidy. Are you there?
Yes, Commissioner.
We've had a 20-degree temperature shift in the last hour in the Sahara, Ma. Satellite charts show glacier movement at the poles. It looks like an eclipse. What the hell's going on up there?
We don't know exactly what's happening yet, but our Mycroft computer terminal shows readings that indicate the sun is losing electromagnetic energy at a rate greater than normal. We may be headed for a gravitational collapse.
Pardon me, Dr. Cassidy. The mass proximity indicator is registering...
Not now, Tim. I've got...
Dr. Cassidy, are you setting up solar radiation scanning?
What? Solar scanning? Yes, we're working on it, sir. Tim, have communications patch Mycroft through to the ISA computers.
Right.
Commissioner White, I'm having our computer tech supply your office with a duplicate of our current information tapes. You'll have everything we've got shortly.
Yes, Doctor. My terminal is receiving it now. Hey, is this right? It can't be.
I'm afraid so, Commissioner White. We've got about 60 hours before the sun reaches singularity and Earth freezes solid.
What can we do to help?
Well, first of all, we need you to send an SCT up here right away. We need to make a house call.
Well, the only space exploration team I've got for immediate launch that can handle this is Delta One.
Delta One? Oh, wait a minute. That's Graydon, right? Captain John Graydon?
And Buddy Griff. That's right, Ma.
Oh, no, Commissioner. Isn't there anyone else you could send us?
I'm sorry, Doctor. That's the team. We'll launch immediately. Their ETA is 3 hours, 10 minutes. Keep us informed, Ma.
Yes, sir. We'll keep you informed. Out.
Dr. Cassidy, what's wrong?
I can't believe they're sending Buddy Griff up here. They might as well let the damn sun go out.
Delta One, SCT Command. Report to ISA pre-launch immediately.
What? Oh, we just got in. Boy, you can't get a spare minute anywhere anymore. Oh, come on, Captain. Let's just finish this hand, huh?
Oh, we better pass for now, buddy. We better get down there.
Pass? The man's 18 in back of me. I got a hot 21, and he says pass.
It's just a game. We can pick it up later.
It's just a game. I'll say it's just a game. All right. ISA says jump, and Captain John Graydon jumps. That's how come you're a bloody hero and I'm just a lover.
And that's the story of your life, right, buddy?
Dr. Cassidy, I just got back from spectral analysis. The mass proximity indicators are registering some kind of solid object near the sun. It's like a planetoid.
Oh, Tim, don't be silly. The MPI is probably reading solar flare-off gases.
But I think there's something there.
Don't worry about it, Tim. Besides, the problem right now is the SCT crew they're sending us.
I don't understand. Isn't that the next logical step?
Logical step, yes. Logical team, no. Especially with Buddy Griff.
Buddy Griff?
Captain John Graydon's co-pilot. The Prince of Pomposity.
John Graydon. I met him just after he got back from Altair. He's a great pilot. I remember a lecture he gave our academy class in 2010.
It's not John who worries me. It's Griff. During the Altair mission, my father was with them. Buddy made a very bad judgment error with a photon laser. It caused my father's death.
Oh, Doctor, I'm sorry. What? I had no idea.
Yes. Well, never mind. I'll deal with that later. Well, let's get up to spectral analysis and take a look at this planetoid of yours.
I'm really worried about this, Doctor. I have a theory that this object is affecting the sun. Now, don't ask me how the devil it got there.
Tim, pull yourself together.
Hi, fellas. Graydon.
Commissioner White.
Griff.
Hey, que pasa, Chief?
Listen, men, we've got problems with the sun. Heavy solar activity that needs some first-hand observation. You'll be briefed on Starlab by Dr. Cassidy.
Starlab, huh?
That's right. They're expecting you right away. You'd better get over to launch control now.
Wait, have I got time to get some cigarettes?
Come on, buddy. Let's go.
Lock tanking secured.
Delta One, you are cleared for launch. 2030 Zulu. Your trajectory is 010 degrees.
Market control, 010 degrees.
Give my regards to Earth Control. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Roger, Delta One, you
We have liftoff. All systems go.
Oh, man, I just love a good rocket ride.
ISA Launch Control reports Delta One liftoff, Dr. Cassidy. Their ETA is a little less than 2 hours.
All right, Tim, keep me informed.
Yes, Doctor. There's more data coming in on the mass proximity indicator.
What do you mean?
Instruments show a planet-sized mass does exist. It's roughly on the same plane of the ecliptic, someplace inside the orbit of Venus.
A planet? In the orbit of Venus? You're crazy, Tim.
I realize it sounds bizarre.
Look, Tim, we both checked the radio telescope reports from spectral analysis. There were no visible signs of any planetoid. Well, there must be something wrong with the MPI. Have the technicians compu-scan the circuits.
But, Dr. Cassidy...
And when Delta One docs, bring them to my office.
Yes, Doctor.
As the sun's unusual activity continues, Starlab researchers work around the clock to unlock the mystery. Tim has found a clue, which Dr. Cassidy believes to be a fluke. Computer error? Maybe. But what Tim may have found could be the first sign of alien worlds. Continues. Strange solar activity threatens the survival of Earth. A solar exploration team is sent to investigate. Under the direction of Dr. Mara Cassidy at Starlab, a space observatory. There is little time.
Dr. Cassidy?
Yes, Tim.
Delta One reporting, Captains Graydon and Griff.
Thank you, Tim. Come in, gentlemen.
Hello, Dr. Cassidy. Good to see you again.
Hello, Captain Graydon. Griff?
Hiya, Doc. Hey, where's the hero's welcome? No band, no parade, no hats and horns. I thought this was a big deal.
Like the big deal with my father, right?
Oh, look, lady, there were problems for all of us on Altair. What happened with your father could have involved anybody. It just happened to be me.
That's right, buddy. It just happened to be you.
All right, you two. Enough of this. We've got work to do. Can you tell us why we're here, Doctor?
Well, you've observed the unusual solar activity during the past few hours.
Yes, of course. We were wondering if there are any solar-collecting activities that could be causing this.
No, we've checked that. There's something going on with the sun itself. That's why we need you, to take pictures and run solar tests close up. Before it goes dead.
Dead? The sun? Oh, Doc, you've been out without a spacesuit too long. That's impossible.
No, I'm afraid it's not impossible, buddy. Watch the computer terminal. Tim?
Right.
That's frightening. Wow. What's our bottom line?
I want you to get as close as you can.
We'll have you patched into the Mycroft computer.
We can then direct you from that point as to what to do next.
Oh, just what I need to end up as barbecued spaceman.
We better get rolling.
Right. Tim, take Captains Graydon and Griff down to mission control.
All right.
Good luck, you two.
We'll get the story for you, Mora.
Yeah, and if you're real good, we'll sell you the rights. Bye.
I didn't expect you two at Starlab so quick.
Oh, we didn't either, Tim. But we had this tailwind.
A tailwind? Right. By the way, Captain Graydon, I feel I should tell you there's something out there by the sun.
Oh, really? What do you mean, Tim?
I have a theory about all this.
Theory? What theory? About what?
Well, I'm certain there's a planetoid out there next to the sun, drawing off energy.
A planetoid? You think it's alien?
Well, let me put it this way. It's not ours. We haven't been able to track it visually because of the glare from the sun's rays, so I can't prove my theory yet.
We'll keep an eye out, Tim. Thanks for the tip.
Right. So long, and good luck.
Thanks, Tim.
Delta 1, you are at T-minus 30. Launch.
Roger, Starlab Control. T-minus 28 and counting.
Delta 1, telecom computer lock. 775 megahertz. Our Mycroft data transfer is online.
Channel 775 locked. Transfers online. Check.
Starlab Control, we're on the grid. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Lift away.
As Delta One moves into the black depth of space, Captains Graydon and Griff set a course for a dying sun.
We're getting close. Is shielding operational?
It is now, Captain.
Delta One, this is Starlab. We scope you at 214 degrees, bearing 030. We have visual radio telescope contact with you. MPI shows a planet-sized mass close to your present position. You are off course by 02.5 degrees. Have you visual contact?
Starlab. Starlab, this is Delta One. Do you receive? Over.
What the? Skipper?
What's happening, buddy? Where's our power?
The main rockets just went branchless. Flame out. We've lost our maneuvering power.
The radio's gone, too. Fire retros.
I am, Skipper. Nothing. They're like a plate of cold spaghetti.
We're being pulled off course. The compass has gone berserk.
What is happening?
Buddy, what the devil is that?
What? Where?
Look. Over here, through the infrared viewing screen, off the port side.
Where did that come from? It's huge. It's definitely not an asteroid.
No, it's too spherical.
Well, whatever it is, we're being pulled towards it.
Look at the size of that thing. I wonder if that's what Tim was babbling about. You don't suppose...
What, Captain?
Never mind. That's the strangest looking thing I've ever seen. It's gotta be some kind of a giant vehicle.
Like a planetoid, Captain?
I didn't really want to say it.
Yeah, I know. Well, hang on, Captain. We're on a collision course with it.
Dr. Cassidy, look! On the tracking screen, Delta One! It's gone!
What's happened to them?
They vanished! Right off the screen, the scopes, the radios, everything. They're gone! I knew it!
Keep trying to establish contact. We've got to locate them.
Hey, Captain. What happened? Who turned out the lights? Buddy, we're inside Tim's planetoid.
What?
Oh, man, I must have blacked out. Look, over there. An opening. That's where we must have come in.
Hey, what's that?
Something's outside the hatch door.
I think we've got company. I hope that's the name of the hotel.
Disembark your craft. You are under Markov control. Do not resist.
I guess we better do as he says, buddy. They look pretty gruesome.
Really? Alien beings. We've made contact with aliens.
I am Gorgon of the Markov Confederacy.
Come with us!
I'm Captain John Graydon, ISA Terra. Where are you taking us? I always knew I should have taken foreign languages.
All right, don't get pushy. Get your claws off me. Boy, are you weird looking.
Of no Markov Confederacy, at least in this galaxy.
Well, me neither, Chief.
Wow. This must be the lobby.
Commander Konar, we have intruders on Voltar. Intruders? By what reason do you come to Voltar?
Well, Doc, you see, we really didn't plan on it. You might say we sort of fell into it, you know what I mean?
Why do you approach Voltar Sun Miners?
Sun Miners? We're from Terra, Earth. We're not intruders. We're on an emergency mission. Our sun is dying.
Captain, we've just stumbled onto the reason.
I am Zar Konar, commander of the Markov Confederacy, fifth galaxy of Tremion. You are intruders.
Look, Commander Konar, we were pulled off our mission by you.
You have entered forbidden space. Markov space.
Markov space? What are you doing to our sun?
We collect and store great energy from many suns. Yours is not the first.
Yeah? Well, listen, you sun stealers. Earth can't survive without that energy.
Then you shall perish. We take suns in many galaxies. It must be so for Markov existence.
Hey, no way, you oversized tin termite. We're not gonna stand for this.
Buddy, no, don't. Buddy, are you all right?
It's all right, Captain. Run for it. I'll handle these things.
Seize them.
Run for it, Skip. Get out of here.
Buddy, are you crazy?
Run, damn it. In here. I'll duck behind this girder. Okay, now, down this corner. Through here. Oh, which ramp? That one, that's it. There, there's the ship. Oh, if I could just manage to get the...
Stop, Geron!
Oh, boy, too close for cover. Oh, all right, I made it. Oh, no. I sure hope that energy field is null. Come on, baby. Come on, fly, Delta One. Fire, damn it. All right, Delta One. Let's get the hell out of here. I'm moving. The force field is null. Good. Instruments show me clear. I'm through. I've made it. I can't believe it. Oh, no. Wait a minute. What's that pull? Oh, no. They've got a pressure beam on me. I've got to go FTL. Quick. Okay. I'm out of their orbit. Wait. Buddy. What about Buddy? I've got to get back. I've got to get help. I can't just leave them there. Starlab Control. This is Delta One. Come in, Starlab Control. Starlab, thank God. This is Delta One. I've been overtaken. We've been in contact with alien beings. The planetoid. Tim was right. It does exist. There are aliens.
John Graydon uses every faculty to blast free of the Markov aliens and return to Starlab.
Call themselves Markovs. Buddy's still inside. We've got to get him out.
Thoughts of what he just experienced race through his mind at laser speed. It is imperative to warn Starlab and Earth. The threat is no longer theory. It is reality. Graydon and Griff have made contact with alien worlds. The Sun Stealers was written by Mike Hodell and Lee Hansen. Associate producer, Jeff Allen. Music director, Tom Rounds. Our engineer was Stu Jacobs. Assistants to the producer, Laurie Tyler and Aaron O'Neill. Technical consultant, Peter Skye. Alien Worlds was created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen and is distributed by Watermark Incorporated. And so, until next time, This is Roger Dressler inviting you to join us for the conclusion of The Sun Stealers on Alien Worlds.
Okay, we got a little bit of a break here. Be right back.
Skies, 1,000 miles in space, the Astronomical Space Observatory Starlab lazily drifts in orbit. Research teams aboard have detected strange solar activity on Earth's sun. Space exploration team John Graydon and Buddy Griff are sent to investigate and face a bizarre encounter.
We're being pulled off course. The compass has gone berserk. Buddy, what the devil is that? Where did that come from? It's huge. Whatever it is, we're being pulled towards it. Hang on, Skipper. We're on a collision course with it.
Delta One is mysteriously pulled aboard an alien planetoid.
I am Zar Konar, commander of the Markat Confederacy, 5th galaxy of Tremion. You are intruders.
Buddy, are you all right? Run for it, Skip. I'll handle these things.
Resisting, Buddy Griff creates a diversion, allowing John Graydon to escape from the alien planetoid aboard the Delta One spaceship.
Starlab Control, this is Delta One. Come in, Starlab Control. The planetoid. Tim was right. It does exist. There are aliens. I've been overtaken.
John Graydon, shaken by the alien encounter, returns to Starlab in part two of The Sun Stealers on Alien Worlds.
Here, Dr. Cassidy. They're bringing Captain Graydon in now.
Okay, Tim, come on.
All levels report.
It's pretty strange, isn't it?
What, Tim?
Well, haven't you heard? I mean, something went wrong. They were overtaken by aliens. Buddy didn't get out.
I've only gotten the preliminary report. I'm not sure about any aliens yet.
Hi, Mara. Tim.
Jerry. Where is he?
He's in the isolation airlock chamber.
How is he?
Doc Benson says he'll be all right. Radiation levels are minor, but there's enough presence to leave him in the capsule for at least an hour. We need to run a couple more tests. You can talk to him on the intercom.
Good, Jerry. Tim, pull the Mycroft onboard computer tapes and begin decoding them. Better check over Delta One's flight recorders, too. Send all the information to the ISA.
All right.
John, thank God you're okay.
Mara, we're not alone out here. Buddy didn't make it out. He's inside an alien planetoid. It's draining the sun's energy.
Oh, take it easy, John. What's draining energy?
The Markabs.
What?
Oh, Mara, they're awful. Like insects. Tall, very tall. I'd say maybe about 7 feet. Their bodies are black and shiny. Claw-like hands and large radiating eyes.
Good Lord. Buddy. What about him? Is he...
But Buddy, the Buddy caused a diversion so I could escape. We've got to get back there and get him out.
Well, of course, John.
Dr. Cassidy, we have the ISA. We're feeding them to your televideo screen.
All right. I hope they've got a lead on all this.
Mara, we just got the reports. It's unbelievable. How's Graydon doing?
He's here in quarantine, Commissioner White. Listen, I trust you've received the flight tapes by now?
Yes, Ma, we haven't come up with anything solid yet, though. We're still trying to analyze all the information. But I'm afraid the computers at Jadel Institute have given us a new prediction.
What are you talking about?
Well, Doctor, according to them, we have less than 9 hours before the sun reaches a point of non-recovery. There's really not enough time for us physically to analyze and return you all that data.
So what does that mean?
Well, Ma, I'm afraid you're on your own. It's up to your people at Star Lab to stop those aliens.
Their eyes turn instinctively toward a dimming ball of fire hanging in space. The sun is fading, dying, and with it the future of Earth. The hopes of a planet ride upon their shoulders as they prepare an opposition against alien worlds. Continues. The life expectancy of Earth has been reduced to 9 hours as our sun fades into obscurity. Alien creatures revealed as the Markab Confederacy continue to drain our solar energy. Starlab Research Director Mara Cassidy, along with her assistant Tim and Space Exploration Captain John Graydon, are the only ones who can stop the Markabs, if indeed they can be stopped.
Oh, John. Well, come on in. Glad to see you out of quarantine.
That makes two of us, Mara.
How are you feeling?
Much better, thanks.
Good. Can you recreate for me just exactly what happened to you and Griff aboard Delta One?
Well, we were within the ecliptic range of the sun about 5 minutes out, and we were getting ready for our first photo scan pass.
Yes?
And all of a sudden, our radios went dead. Instruments, everything. We completely lost all power.
Mm-hmm.
Then we spotted this incredible object about 5 kilometers in diameter, metallic, black, with a large disc on top.
And then?
We lost control of the ship. And we were drawn into the object. We took about 6 G's. Buddy blacked out. Next thing I knew, we were taken off the ship by the aliens that I told you about. They told us they were mining the sun's energy.
But how?
I don't know.
Oh, Tim. Good. You've got the Mycroft report? What's wrong? You're white as a sheet.
That thing out there is the cosmic wonder of all time.
Tell me about it.
What did you find?
Well, the Mycroft computer came through like Captain Video. Solar depth sensors, heat generation refractions, course deviations, wavelength correlations, video scan of the planetoid.
Tim, get to the bloody point. What did you find?
Basic theory of electromagnetic energy, Dr. Cassidy.
Electromagnetic energy?
Yes, that's right. The alien planetoid is an electromagnetic field extracting ultraviolet radiation through infrared oscillation.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, it means the Markabs are drawing ultraviolet light energy and converting it to a form of electricity.
That would explain the invisibility. The radiation creates a massive shield around them which blends with the sun's rays.
Exactly. That's why only the MPI picked it up originally on the infrared screens.
That's very interesting.
That's not all. The tractor beam that pulled you into the planetoid was also magnetically energized.
I see. Well, that would explain the compass going crazy just before we lost control.
Wait. That's it.
What?
We haven't got much time. Tim, get over to the hydro lab. Have them assemble a 50-megawatt portable CMG. We'll use the Michelson interferometer principle.
A countermagnetic generator, of course. A beam splitter. Oh, brilliant, Doctor. I'll meet you two in the briefing room in 20 minutes.
I think you two blew a capacitor in your brains. You've lost me. I'm just a space pilot.
And that's just exactly what we need you to be, John. It's a long shot, but it's the only one we've got. An 1880 theory that could put the Markabs right out of business. Come on. I'm going over to the lab. We need to get together Delta One. We're going into that planetoid. If this works, John, we may be able to turn the Markab energy field back on top of them. If I can figure out a way to deactivate the pressor beam. Do you think you can get us back in?
Yes. Yes, I'm sure of it. But we'll need some kind of an escort to create a diversion. I'll go up to Mission Control and recruit a few pilots from Stargazer One.
Okay. I'll meet you in briefing within half an hour.
As time continues to slip into the past, the future draws closer. They're designed to dethrone the Markab power. A tenuous betide to the indelible. Meanwhile, planetoid captive Buddy Griff remains a solitary man to an alien world.
Earthman intruder, your resistance to our way is useless.
You don't give us any choice, Konar. By our very nature, we're survivors. We must resist.
Ours is to destroy that which resists.
Why do you have to destroy everything? Don't you guys know how to create?
Our system of long ago was the victim of devastating destruction. We have long since created the power to never again be victims. It is the way of the Cord.
The Cord?
The rule of Markab supremacy in the universe to destroy.
It sounds like a case of bad karma, Doc.
I do not understand.
I can't believe I've actually gone over your 7-foot head. Karma is the...
Take him away!
Hey, what are you doing?
You too shall be destroyed. We are the rulers of the light. Yours shall be the world of darkness.
Nah, you'll never get away with this, Konar. My people will be back. You're all lunatics.
Can't be a no gratitude.
What's this all about?
All right. You fellas have been asked to fly this mission based on your experience as fighter pilots. Now, we've programmed D-28 missiles aboard your ships for a diversion ploy on the Markabs. Hopefully, the counter-orbital passes will cause enough confusion to allow us time to land Delta-1 inside. Now, if we're not out by the 20-minute limit, you're instructed to launch full Titan Helitrobus missiles into the side of the Markab planetoid, and then return to Starlab. Any questions? Okay. We'll launch in 8 minutes. Synchronized watches. 1600 hours, 22 minutes, and 15 seconds. Mark. See you guys on the 50-yard line.
As Starlab pilots prepare the final assault on the alien encounter, a galaxy clings to the hope of triumph on alien worlds. Continues. The Markab aliens must be stopped. Their effect on Earth's sun is tantamount to galactic devastation. Starlab mounts the final front as John, Tim, and Mara prepare to effect the aliens' demise.
T-minus 27 seconds and counting.
Okay, Captain, the device is on board.
Good. Mara, would you strap yourself in, please? Mission control, Delta-1, on the grid for 028, trajectory on 1775.
Captain John Raiden prepares the leading assault on the Markab Confederacy. Mara Cassidy and Tim ready themselves for the alien confrontation.
All right, Tim, let's go over the mechanics of the CMG beam splitter.
I have the timing device set for 18 minutes on the detonator. When it triggers, it'll pull every bit of energy within a radius of 5 kilometers into the magnet center. The energy overload will create a chain reaction. As the alien storage collector beam split, it'll blow them right out of the galaxy.
Good. John, during the time the device triggers, we'll lose all magnetically operated instruments.
You mean I should be ready to fly Delta-1 by the seat of my pants, so to speak?
Hey, I like that. By the seat of my pants.
It's an old term used when flying airplanes without instruments, Tim.
You used to fly airplanes?
Oh, John's a pilot of many experiences, Tim. Including pilot commander for the Jupiter 1 mission.
Really? Oh, gee, that must have been some flight.
Yeah, Mara remembers that one, don't you, Mara? She was our science officer, and a good one, too.
That was my introduction to the ISA. And the last time I saw my father alive.
Pardon me for asking, Doctor, but what happened to your father? On Altair, I mean.
My father was chief science officer for NASA. They were conducting neutron laser tests in zero gravity. He was setting up the guide path for the beam's target. Buddy Griff pre-detonated the laser's timing mechanism. My father was killed.
Mara, listen, it's time you knew. That's not really what happened. It wasn't Buddy's mistake.
What are you talking about? The report said
I know all about the report. It was an accident, that's true. But your father miscalculated the laser's initial impact strength on the beam's path. The device was hot, overheated from testing all day. The heat triggered the premature detonation, not Buddy.
How do you know all this?
From Dr. Solomon, the project coordinator. He told me the whole story shortly after it happened. But he never said a word about it to anyone, including me.
But it wasn't in the report. Why?
Because Buddy wouldn't allow it in the report. Since your dad was a notable scientist, Buddy took full responsibility for his mistake to clear his record.
Why didn't Buddy tell me the truth?
It's a strange guy. Buddy's a rebel, but he's also guided by a strong sense of honor.
I see.
All right, if you two are ready, I've got to get our act together before our Markab madmen discover we're here.
Commander Konar, enemy ships are approaching Voltar. Enemy vessels? More intruders? Who are they? They are of undetermined origin, but they appear to have an Earthcraft configuration. Launch the Voltanias! Destroy them at once! Interceptors launched on enemy targets. Closing.
Captain, on the probe screen!
Good eye, Tim. The Markabs have obviously spotted us. This is Delta 1 Leader to Strike Force. Okay, you guys. Looks like this is the 50-yard line. Execute ZK-15s now.
You've got your diversion, Captain.
Right. And there's the planetoid.
Really is incredibly large.
Oh, my God.
Hang on. We're going down. Mara, I sure hope your rig nullifies that tractor beam.
Tim, program the key code.
5513, lock. Energize. Locked, Captain. We should be clear of any field wave.
Good. So much for part one. Now all we gotta do is find the right place to sit down. There. There's the opening.
Radar configurations check out. Here's the coordinates given on the open side. Mycroft's computations are correct.
I love you, Mycroft.
Not bad for an expensive adding machine.
Mycroft's a lot more than that, Captain.
I'm just kidding, Tim. Hang on. We're setting Delta One right in that pigeonhole. Okay, let's get this over with. Here, help me with the CMG. Okay. All right, you both have your communicators?
Yeah.
All right, Tim, you'll bring the CMG with me. Mora, you guard Delta One. And if you run into any trouble, you call us. You've got your laser drone, right?
Right.
All right, don't be afraid to use it if you have to.
I'm ready, Captain.
We'll set up the jamming device. Then I'm going to try and find Buddy. Okay, Tim, let's go.
Good luck.
Good grief. Do they have to make this thing so heavy?
God, it's cold in here. This place is amazing. I've got to get some pictures of this interior. Oh, someone's coming.
We look down this corridor.
Let's look over here.
Very well.
The aircraft, it's back.
And the prisoner has escaped.
Where is he?
Somewhere in this quadrant. I'll look for him. Call the guards. Find the other Earthlings. Quick, the alarm.
Captain Graydon. Come in, John.
Yes, Mara.
They know we're here. I just saw two of them. They said something about an escaped prisoner.
That can only be Buddy.
What do you want me to do?
Check your locator. Make sure you don't get lost, and then go for it, Mara. Follow them. Be careful. If you find Buddy, call me.
Okay.
Earthman, so you think you can escape? You cannot hide from Garagon.
Oh, hey, hiya, Chief. Hide me? Nah. I was just giving you a little exercise, you know? It's sort of keeping you on your toes.
Your spacecraft has returned.
Returned? Delta One? What do you mean?
He means...
Hey, all right, lady. Pretty fair shooting. You're just in time. I was just in the middle of escaping. Where's John? You didn't fly here by yourself, did you?
Oh, no. He and Tim are down in the power collecting room. We brought a CMG to blow this place to kingdom come.
CMG. What's that? One of your toys?
It's a countermagnetic generator. We think it'll counteract the method the Markevs are using to draw energy from the sun.
Sweetheart, save it. Maybe later, over dinner, perhaps?
Oh, that's right. We better get out of here.
And hopefully not any too soon. Now, quick, down this corridor.
How much longer, Tim?
Just two more connections here. Hand me those leads.
Tim, you're shaking like a leaf.
Yeah, I know. I just hate working under this much pressure.
Well, now's a fine time to copy that one.
I'm okay. There. That's it.
I wonder where Mara is. I can't raise her on the communicator.
Should I set the timer now? We'll have 18 minutes, you know.
Yes, set it. You get back to Delta One, and I'll head back the other way. And then if
Captain,
I...
Captain, watch out!
Stop! Surrender!
Tim! I never knew you had it in you.
I can't believe I did that!
All right, set the timer. Let's get out of here.
Set!
There they are! Stop them!
Quick, Tim, this way!
John and Tim find themselves trapped by the Markevs. The CMG timer has been set. Only precious moments remain before a deadly explosion.
Look! There's Buddy!
Hey, all right, John!
Buddy, thank God. Where's Mark?
Back at Delta One.
We've only got 2 minutes.
Hurry!
Get on board, Mara.
Okay, everyone. We're not out of this yet.
Buddy, fire Module 1.
Right, Skip. I'll take the rocket guns and hold them off.
Lift. We have manned ignition. Clearing the planetoid.
Oh, yeah! CMG detonation, 15 seconds.
Telemetry, 4+4. Stand by to hit faster than light speed.
Check. FTL, primary ignition.
10 seconds to detonation.
FTL, main power. Now.
We're clear. We made it. Oh, thank God.
CMG detonation, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There they go.
It worked!
Of course it worked!
Hey. And so we bid farewell to the Goosamines as they and their planetoid sink slowly into the west and the east
and the North.
Together, a small group of people with tremendous courage and confidence have saved Earth from the threat of eternal darkness. The Markab sun miners have been destroyed soon enough to allow the sun's own energy to regain its mighty power. The heroism of Delta One's mission has relieved a galaxy from the peril of alien worlds. Created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen. Associate producer, Jeff Allen. Our engineer was Stu Jacobs. Production coordinator, Aaron O'Neill. Produced and distributed by Watermark Incorporated. Executive producer, Tom Rounds.
This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. The Enchanted Castle, Fairy Tales from Flowerland by Hartwell James. Never tread beneath your feet flowers fair and flowers sweet. Touch us tenderly with care, flowers sweet and flowers fair. One bright sunny morning, little May went out into the fields to gather a bunch of flowers for her mother. She went happily along, and soon came to a meadow, gay with yellow buttercups. She picked a handful, and then ran on, for she could see, just over the next wall, the red blossoms of a field of poppies. Some of these she gathered and put among her buttercups, but she did not stay long in this field, for she knew that a little farther on there was a stream, beside which grew the pretty blue forget-me-nots of which her mother was so fond. So May gathered a big bunch of these, and now held in her hand buttercups, poppies, and forget-me-nots. But after a while she began to get tired, so she sat down on the bank to rest, and presently she heard a soft little voice say, "Do you like butter?" May looked quickly all around, and saw before her a pretty little lady, with a crown of gold upon her head, and dressed all in yellow. She was very much surprised, but being a polite little girl, replied, "Yes, thank you, and will you please tell me your name?" "Certainly," said the little lady. "My name is Fairy Yellow, and I am queen of the buttercups and daffodils and all the yellow flowers. Here come my sisters, Fairy Red and Fairy Blue." And there they were, two more little ladies, one dressed in red and the other in blue. "Good morning," said May. "Good morning," said Fairy Red. "I live among the poppies, and all the red flowers belong to me, poppies and roses, and the holly-berries, and many more besides." Then Fairy Blue said, "I am mistress of the bluebells, and harebells, and forget-me-nots, and all the sweet blue flowers." "I think you are all very pretty," said May, "and I shall always think of you when I look at the flowers. But now I must go home, so good-bye." "But we are going with you," said the fairies. And to May's astonishment each crept into a flower and nestled down comfortably, Fairy Yellow in a buttercup, Fairy Red in a poppy, and Fairy Blue in a forget-me-not. So May gathered up her flowers and set off home, and all the way the fairies sang to her the sweetest songs.
Okay, that's it. This is another Night Transmissions in the can. Oh, by the way, you should go to the website, nighttransmissions.com, Night Transmissions, just one word, and on that page you'll find information about everything that was on the show. Well, nearly everything. Usually everything. Oh, and I don't mention this often enough, there's a phone number. key voice phone number. The odds of you getting through to me or any human being are rather remote. But it is a good place to leave messages. And I like it when that happens. The Google Voice number is 541-995-0594. Give us a call. In any case, just a thought. See ya.